I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Last year, 578 people died of heroin overdoses in Maryland. State health officials estimate that annual deaths from heroin and related drugs have doubled since 2010. That being the case, why did the price of a life-saving heroin overdose drug increase from $97 to $370 for 10 doses? And what can be done to lower the cost and make it more accessible? That's a question from Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch, our guest in this first hour of the show. Another question, is the public entitled to know when shipments of crude oil are scheduled to move through their communities on rail lines? We'll also hear about the Attorney General's recent ruling on same-sex divorce and what consumers should know about the recent CareFirst data breach. Attorney General Brian Frosch on Midday after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. It's Wednesday. Let's see. It's the third Wednesday of August already. So that means David Zurawick will be here, the Baltimore Sun media critic. We'll get a chance to speak with David in the second hour of the show about all kinds of things. David Simon's latest creation on HBO, the E! Channel documentary about the life. It's a series, a documentary series about the life of Caitlyn Jenner after the transition from Bruce Jenner. Donald Trump, he's making news every day and saying outrageous things. We'll get a chance to speak with David Zurawick about Donald Trump on television. And the question whether anybody on TV besides Megyn Kelly is going to be able to challenge Donald Trump to really take him on. Stephen Colbert's show starts September 8th. He's replacing David Letterman on The Late Show, and he says, quote, he prays every night that Donald Trump stays in the presidential race until at least September 8th. But no one, he lights a candle that this will, that he'll stay in the presidential race, but he hopes that Donald Trump doesn't get too close to the candle so as not to burn his incredible hair. That's a, so Stephen Colbert. Anyway, David Zurawick will be joining us in the second hour of our show today. That's after the news at one. In this hour of the show, we welcome Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch back to Midday. We have a lot to talk about in this hour with him. Nice to see you again, Attorney General Frosch.
Thanks for having me.
Getting used to saying that instead of Senator Frosch.
Yeah.
I've been in office.
Brian will do.
Okay. And listen, we're going to open the phone lines because there's some things here I think our listeners would be interested in and might have some experiences with. Identity theft, a concern about that. Other consumer issues, student loan debt. We've got several things to cover with you in this hour of the show. So I'll just throw out the phone number early in case anyone has a question for you about, you know, consumer issues. 410-662-8780 is the phone number for live talk on Midday. Our toll-free long-distance number, 866-661-9309. Good from Western Maryland or the Eastern Shore. And also our email address if you have a question for Brian Frosch, midday@wypr.org. So several things to cover. The one I was interested in first has to do with heroin overdoses.
Right.
Because we've done a couple of shows on this topic. Health officials in Maryland say heroin overdoses have doubled in the last 4 or 5 years. Some 578 or 579 deaths in Maryland just last year alone.
Right.
So there is a drug available to save lives, to pull people back from the edges of death from overdose. It's called naloxone. But along with that comes the story about the price of naloxone.
Well, that's right. The price has skyrocketed, and I think it's two or three times what it was just a couple of years ago. And the company that makes it was making money then. They're making a lot more money now because we do have a heroin epidemic, not just in Maryland, but all across the country. And I and another of other attorneys general have written to the company asking them to give us a break on the price. I know our secretary of the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene here in Maryland has done the same. We're hoping for some price relief, but naloxone is a life-saving drug. if somebody is overdosed and they get an injection or they're able to squirt it up their nose, it can bring people out of the overdose right away.
It's done this. EMT crews have this.
Yep.
In some parts of the country, police departments have
it.
First responders have it.
Yep.
So the main customers then are government agencies?
Well,
in large
part? Government agencies have it, but it's in emergency rooms, so hospitals, doctors, and there are a number of things that we can do to make it more available. New York, for example, has passed a law that said pharmacies will have a standing order to give people naloxone. So if somebody runs into a drugstore and says, give me naloxone, they can buy it from the pharmacist. No questions asked. You don't have to go to your doctor first. If it's an emergency, you can get the naloxone.
There's something wrong with this picture for me. I don't know. I understand that Amphastar Pharmaceuticals, that's the California-based company behind this, they have to make a profit, right?
Yep,
they invest in research and development to come up with different drugs. But there's something wrong with a life-saving drug that's in demand, in new demand, right? Because of a problem that we are experiencing in this country, and then the price goes up from $97 for a 10-dose package to $370 for 10 doses.
Yeah, this is the great free market system at work, Dan.
Yeah. So what do you hope to do, just appeal to the company?
Yes, that's really all we can do. Now, you know, this is a drug that I don't believe is protected by patent any longer. And so there are other companies that are getting back into the business of producing it, we hope. And competition ought to bring the price down as well. But in the meantime, we're hoping that Amphastar will give us a break.
Here's another subject that caught my eye from the Sun story just a couple of days ago about crude oil shipments.
Crude
oil shipments that come through our communities, our cities, the counties, wherever.
Yeah.
You don't think about this very much until a disaster happens. And we've had a couple of disasters, one famously a couple of years ago in Quebec that killed 47 people, a derailment and an explosion. We also had the pollution of the James River last year down in Virginia.
Right.
From this. So some community groups said, listen, we want to know what's coming through our city, our town, our community in Maryland by rail and when.
Right. And the Public Information Act makes that information available to them, but the railroad companies objected and filed suit.
So why did they object to that?
You'd really have to ask them that question.
Well, you must have heard the argument.
I think they were concerned that people would try to interfere with the shipments, or there might be a terrorist attack, or they just don't want people to know that these very dangerous chemicals are being shipped in huge quantities through their neighborhoods.
Did they actually invoke the terrorist threat? I'm not making light of it. I just want to know, did they actually make that as part of their argument?
I can't remember specifically whether it was in their pleadings. I've heard that argument made.
This was in Baltimore Circuit Court.
It was in Baltimore Circuit Court. And the court said, and we, our office took the position that the Public Information Act required the disclosure, and the circuit court judge agreed with us. Now it's going to be appealed, and ultimately our appellate courts will resolve it permanently. But it seems to me that people ought to be able to find out what's going through their neighborhoods, because this is going through not just the commercial sections of town, but through backyards and everybody's homes are within reach of a spill if it occurs.
Now, do state officials know about all this? Emergency responders must know that CSX is bringing through a shipment of, I don't know, something that's potentially explosive, if not crude oil?
Well, this stuff is coming through every day.
Right.
So I'm not sure that first responders are keeping a special eye out on a particular shipment. I think they're on alert all the time, and they're aware all the time that the stuff is being shipped. It has to be. I mean, frankly, you can't get oil, you can't get gasoline to your local gasoline station unless someone's bringing it in by rail or by truck.
So you're pleased with this ruling where a judge said, yeah, the public has a right to know this.
Yes, absolutely.
Secretary of the Environment Ben Grumbles also agreeing with that opinion. So who pushed for this? Was it environmental groups or community groups?
It was community groups that asked for the opinion, yes.
Okay. So there's another topic that if you have a question about, please give us a ring, 410-662-8780. Maryland Delegate Luke Klippinger. Klippinger.
Klippinger.
With a hard G?
With a soft G.
Was it a soft G? Okay. I just had a beer with him last week. I should have asked him whether it was a soft G or a hard G. Anyway, he asked you for an opinion about something, or to at least review the issue of what we'd call same-sex divorce.
Yes, that's right.
And same-sex couples. And you were asked specifically if all the rules in divorce apply to same-sex couples as do other couples,
yes,
heterosexual couples.
Yes, Delegate Klippinger's specific question was, can there be same-sex adultery? And the answer is a pretty common-sense answer, and that is that you can commit adultery if you're in a same-sex relationship. If you're having a same-sex adulterous relationship, it's adultery.
It seemed pretty obvious, doesn't it?
But it does.
You thought it would be better to just put this in writing and say the rules apply both sides and in fault, in divorce where there's a fault.
Well, right? Yes. And I mean, the General Assembly is my client. If a legislator asks a question, asks for an opinion, we give them an answer.
I say fault-based grounds.
Yes.
Fault-based grounds for a divorce.
Well, yes.
Which is one of the categories, right?
That's right. And, you know, in Maryland, you no longer have to have fault in order to get divorced, but it can alter the terms of the financial settlement or the financial resolution. And it has much more limited.
Adultery, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. So if there's a fault basis for the divorce, the judge can take that into consideration in making the split of the marital assets.
Okay. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. A lot of folks may have questions about privacy, invasions of privacy, concerns about data breaches. We've been hearing a lot about that. A lot of federal employees in Maryland concerned about the breach at the Office of Personnel Management. A lot of Blue Cross Blue Shield customers in Maryland who have insurance through CareFirst concerned about the data breach we found out about in May, I think, some 1.1 million customers. And I don't know if the number has grown since then. So we ought to talk about this. And some people have concerns about getting robocalls on cell phones now and the general concern about identity theft. So why don't we get into that a little bit after this break? We'll take a break here with Brian Frosch. He's the Attorney General of Maryland. If you have comments or questions about anything you've heard so far or coming up, are you getting telemarketer calls on your cell phone now? Want to know what to do about that? Have you been a victim of identity theft? Are you concerned about data breaches at your insurance company or your employer? 410-662-8780. Attorney General Brian Frosch of Maryland, our guest in this hour of midday. So hacks and data breaches, this is sort of like the way of life now. You go a while and you hear about another one. It involves millions of people at times. What do we say about it? Why don't we talk specifically about the CareFirst one then? A health insurance company.
The CareFirst one was a big one, but in the last 10 years, I think there have been breaches of about 825 million individual records. So
you mean generally in the United States?
In the United States, you know, almost three times the population of the United States in terms of data breaches. So it's extraordinarily common.
So it can be a breach of your insurance company, your employer, your bank, your bank account.
Right. And I mean, I'm guessing that the folks who are in this business are going after the biggest ones they can get into. But they use the information. Sometimes they'll warehouse it for a while, and sometimes they'll use it right away. But you may have had a data breach 3 years ago that won't surface for another 3 years. Hmm. I'm told that the records, Social Security numbers, and other information about children are much more valuable than the information about adults, because the folks who are stealing it can use it for years before anybody ever figures out about it. They can apply for credit in the name of somebody who is 8 years old and use it for 10 years before that individual may apply for a credit card. So
is that what you're told they're after in the main, a Social Security number?
Yeah. They're after anything that will allow them to apply for credit in the name of the individual whose identity they've stolen.
In the case of CareFirst, that breach, what do we know about it? What do we know why someone would be after that? Is it
because
for Social Security numbers?
Yeah, because you got a million plus people whose identities you can now exploit, and they use it. I mentioned to you a little while ago, my identity has been stolen.
Yes, we were going to talk about that on the air. Are we okay to talk about that on the air?
Sure. I mean,
tell us what happened to you.
Somebody filed a tax return in my name and my wife's name. And what they did was...
In Maryland or to the federal government?
To the federal government. This is very common. They filed a tax return saying, I'm Brian Frosch, send me a tax refund. Sadly, I'm not entitled to a tax refund, but I owe the IRS money. But I got a notice from the IRS, and they said, we're just confirming that you have filed your tax return. I had not. I'd asked for an extension. So it can happen to the man or woman in the street. It can happen to the attorney general.
So they were hoping to get a quick refund from the federal government before they audit the account?
Absolutely. I mean, in the federal government and the state government are very efficient in sending out refunds.
Yes.
So when they get a tax return that looks legitimate.
Yeah, they boast about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, I probably won't lose any money, but it'll be very inconvenient for me because now I've got to go through a whole bunch of bureaucracy in order to get my tax return filed and make sure that they recognize that I'm okay.
And the federal government took a loss on that?
I don't know whether they cut a check or not.
Oh, you don't know? Okay.
But routinely, they do take the loss on that, yes.
And excuse me, did you say how you found out about this?
Yes, the IRS sent me a form letter.
Okay.
And I wrote them back immediately. You can't call them, or I did call them, and they said there was a 45-minute wait to get through. Send us a form. I sent them the form. This happened last April. They just acknowledged it last week.
Do you have any idea how that happened to you?
I don't, but I'm a CareFirst subscriber, so you know it could have been that, but it could have been something that happened 10 years ago.
The CareFirst data breach, I said the $1.1 million was the first count we got from the company about the number of people involved, number of customers involved. Is it greater than that, and does it extend back in time? Did a lot of time elapse before they caught it?
I don't know. I thought they were on top of it relatively quickly, and I think the number you cited is the one that I've heard.
I can add something to this. I just spotted this in a news story about it. The attack occurred June 2014.
Yeah,
2 months after the insurer detected an attack that it believed it had contained.
Yeah. Anthem, which is related to Blue Cross, had an even bigger data breach. And there have been data breaches in insurance companies and other businesses.
So I guess, what do we need to know about this as customers?
Well, I mean, you have to be ready to protect yourself. And if you're in a position where an entity that you do business with has had a data breach, you need to be on guard. Among the things that you can do is check your bank accounts on a regular basis. Check your investment accounts if you have them on a regular basis. Check to make sure that your charges on your credit cards are
legitimate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had several years ago, my credit card company called me up and said, hey, did you just do a charge in Fort Lauderdale or whatever? Nope, not the case. They declined the charge and sent me a new card.
I got one of those alerts, and I really appreciated getting it.
Yeah.
Also, on the upside of this, I just want to mention, I know two people whose banks called them to alert them to something fishy going on with their account. The bank had caught before it happened, or just as it happened, yeah. And they were able to close down their accounts, get new numbers without a lot of damage. So I was impressed by that.
Yeah.
Two different banks.
Me too. And I have also gotten an email or a call from my credit card company about charges that I've done if I've been out of town. So it can be annoying.
Were you in Vegas last week, Brian Frosch? Also, the other news that comes out of midday today, Maryland Attorney General owes back taxes federal government. You said it on the air. No, I'm just kidding. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. If you have a question for a Maryland Attorney General, Brian Frosch. Ellie's been holding. She has a question for you. Ellie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan. Mr. Attorney General, I have a question that may not be so terribly important, but it really is a chronic irritation with me. The backstory is I recently retired from my work, and so I have been home more frequently than I had in the past.
Right.
I receive 10, 12, 15 telephone calls every single day.
Yes.
It's making me crazy.
Yeah, you're not alone, Ellie. So are you signed up on the Do Not Call list, the FCC's Do Not Call list?
I have, yes. Okay. Yes, a number of years ago I signed on to that.
Well, you're still good. There are two problems. One is there are calls that are exempt from the FCC's Do Not Call rule. If it's a charity, if it's a political call, if it's a survey, if it's a business that you have a relationship with, like your bank, your credit card company, they're all allowed to call you.
They're exempt.
They're exempt. So that's one issue. Hmm. The other is there are folks who just violate the Do Not Call list. And if you can get the number, you can report it to the FCC. You can report it to the Maryland Attorney General's office. There are some of them that we can go after and stop, but I got to tell you that a lot of them originate overseas, and they come through. They do what is called spoofing, where you see a number pop up on your phone.
It says White Marsh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you think it's local or
it's
whatever.
It's Kuala Lumpur, actually.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, Ellie, it sounds like, you did the right thing. She got on the Do Not Call list, but there's charities and others that are getting around that.
Mm. I certainly wouldn't mind a charity calling me or my political party calling me. But I really do object to so many of these calls, and either they are out of area or private caller.
Yeah. Well, you should make sure, at least you can say, if you do pick it up and connect with them, you can say, look, I'm on the Do Not Call list. Please don't call me again. They're prohibited from doing that. Some of them will honor it.
I gotta get on that list now, because for a while there, cell phone service was great. No telemarketers, and now every day someone in Omaha, Nebraska is trying to get a hold. I think they want to sell me more Omaha steaks or something. I ordered from that company one time. Anyway, so you got to do it with your cell phone too.
You can put your cell phone in a Do Not Call list too.
Doug on Twitter says, I feel so much better that Brian Frosch went through the same issue with tax return fraud as me. I think he says at least he doesn't feel alone out there.
Yeah.
This has happened to others.
It's happening a lot. People are making a lot of money doing this.
And the IRS has had to fess up about some breaches there, too, in recent days, and the number has grown. 410-662-8780 is our phone number if you have a question for the Attorney General of Maryland, Brian Frosch. This is Mike in North Baltimore with a kind of a personal question. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay.
Yes, hi. Belated congratulations on your victory, Attorney General Frosch.
Thank you,
my
Mike.
Question was, you had a successful career and had seniority in the state legislature. I'm wondering what prompted you to decide to run for Attorney General.
Yeah. Well,
been holding since last November to ask you this. Sorry to make you wait so long, Mike.
Thank you for the question. I felt like I accomplished a lot in the General Assembly, and I felt as if I could have a greater impact on issues that were important to me and important to Marylanders as the Attorney General. And I'm talking about not only prosecuting the bad guys, but also having protecting the environment, keeping people safe in their neighborhoods, protecting consumers. The Attorney General has broad jurisdiction and broad powers, and I thought I could have just a bigger impact. Also, on a very personal level, both of my daughters were out of the house, and it was a good time for me to be able to say, okay, I'm going to spend a lot of time on the campaign trail for a year.
I had another question for you. This has to do with credit cards. Chase Bank, a big settlement. I think this went beyond Maryland, right? This was a
yes.
Almost every state in the country was involved in this settlement with Chase Bank over unlawful credit card debt collection practices.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
$136 million settlement. What was Chase Bank doing wrong?
Well, they were going after people who had not who had paid or partially paid the bills. They were going after people for whom the statute of limitations had run or who had been discharged in bankruptcy, and they were selling the debt to third parties and allowing the third parties to resell the debt. They sell when they
they do this.
Yeah, they do it, and they sell for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, and it's bad information they were giving out. Is that it? People had either paid their debts or
yes. So what happens is, Brian Frosch owes Chase Bank $1,000. They sell that debt to somebody else, and it turns out it's another Brian Frosch, or it turns out that Brian Frosch has paid $400 on it, but they're calling him for $1,000. And the party that they sell it to sells it to somebody else. They may have collected $300, and the guy who gets it doesn't know that now the debt's down to $400 and is still chasing Brian Frosch for $1,000. And
boy, how'd they catch up with Chase Bank on that? They just traced it back to the main bank, to the Chase Bank
yes,
card
because
services.
That's who you owe the money to, and then Chase assigns it to somebody else.
Right.
So I'm sitting there thinking I've borrowed the money from Chase, and I get a call from the XYZ company, and they say, you owe us $1,000. And I say, but I didn't borrow anything from you. It's very confusing for consumers.
This involved 500,000 consumers.
It did.
528,000 consumers, including an estimated 8,039 in Maryland.
That's right. So they halted collection on that 500,000, those 8,000 in Maryland.
Do you think more needs to be done there besides just reaching settlements over the same old grievances with these companies?
I do.
This sounds like you need federal legislation to deal with this.
Well, there may be more legislation that's necessary. One of the problems is that the banks sell these lists. They sell them for pennies on the dollar. I mean, like if you borrowed $1,000, they might sell it for $50. And they sell it without warranties so that the next guy in line doesn't really know that you owe the money and can't prove it, but goes into court and says, Frosch owes me the money.
The states have a fair amount of authority on this or not?
We do. The attorneys general have been pursuing these cases around the country. We're pursuing them in Maryland.
410-662-8780 is our number here. Another call for Brian Frosch, Attorney General of Maryland. Ellen, you're up next. Go right ahead. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Dan. Hi, Brian. I just wanted to follow up on Ellie's question. Somebody told me that when you request a call, or if you actually get a human being and not a robocall, if you actually request that they take your phone, remove your phone number from their list,
yes,
they're legally obliged to do it.
They are,
and so if they're legally obliged to do, I've tried to recall numbers, and they're they say this number's not in service, so I get the idea that but I actually asked the guy who was doing some sort of survey yesterday, and he said, well, I am legally allowed to call you, and I said, well, I'm asking you to take it off.
And what did he say, Ellen?
He said, I just have to ask you a question or something. I have to talk to you for a minute so I don't get in trouble. I don't know what it was, and then I can do it. So, I talked to him I didn't give him any information, and he didn't really ask for anything, but he did.
Hey, Ellen, what was the nature of the call? What was the nature of the call? Was it political survey?
I think it was a survey of some kind.
Yeah, so surveys are exempt, but you don't have to talk to them. I mean, you don't have to pick up the phone. You can hang up on them. You can be polite to them. It's your choice. But when you tell him to remove your number, he's required to do that.
Okay. And then if you get another call, who do you reported to the Consumer Protection Division of the Maryland Attorney General's
Yes.
Office? If you don't, you got to. I mean, it's worth doing. I mean, you have people who work on this.
That we do, and they do a good job. But honestly, if the call is coming from Kazakhstan and is routed through White Marsh, it's kind of tough for us to handle.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here. Francois in Baltimore, we'll take your call.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I wanted to find out about As you know, when the governor canceled the Red Line project here in Baltimore, he claimed that it was based on a thorough analysis that the administration, the Hogan administration, had done.
Right.
And I know that there was a Freedom of Information request that was made in early July to get access to that analysis, to the data that decision was based on. And they had 30 days, according to the law, to release that information, but they haven't. The Maryland Department of Transportation hasn't released it, or the Hogan administration. I was wondering if the Attorney General might be able to comment on that and what he's doing to get that information released to us.
We help the departments comply with the Public Information Act requests, and I'm not familiar with that one in particular, but we do the best we can to enable them to respond to the requests. There sometimes information is subject to a request, but there are pieces that are privileged, an attorney-client communication, some executive privileged documents. And so they may be still searching for those. What they're supposed to do is respond in 30 days and say, we are going to give you the documents, but they're not required to actually produce the documents in 30 days. The General Assembly passed a law in this last session that will help resolve disputes so that when people make a request and don't get the response they were expecting or think they're entitled to, they created an ombudsman in our office to help resolve those requests. Now, I have to tell you, unfortunately, they didn't give us
the money. They didn't fund the ombudsman? Let me guess. I was just going to guess that.
Yeah.
So you don't actually have this ombudsman yet.
So we don't have an ombudsman, and we don't have, you know, everybody in my office has got a job to do. So this ombudsman would be a full-time thing. So we need that.
Has your office been asked to assist with this request on the Red Line?
And I don't know.
Because the information being sought is what kind of review did the Hogan administration undertake of the Red Line and Purple Lines?
I'm pretty sure that our folks at the Department of Transportation, the Assistant Attorneys General at the Department of Transportation, have helped determine what can be disclosed and what need not be disclosed. But beyond that, I don't know.
We'll take a break here. Come back. More questions, if you have them, for Attorney General Brian Frosch of Maryland. 410-662-8780 is our number. You can send a question by email, midday@wypr.org. And we're on Twitter at either Dan Rodericks or MiddayWYPR. You want to take George's call from Heaven to Grace?
What does he want?
It's about workman's comp. We'll see what we can do for you, George. Go ahead with your question. Welcome to Midday. You're on with the Attorney General, Brian Frosch.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. It's actually about wage claims. I was working for a private school in Maryland, and I was sent away for a week to another state, Vermont, and perform work for them. I got back, and I was not paid for my time there. I filed with DLLR. I got a letter and call back saying, we can't help you. You have to file with Vermont. I talked to Vermont, and they told me, we don't have anything to do with it. The work was performed here, but your employer is based in Maryland. And that time, I didn't know how to go forward. I mean, is there a hole in the law there, or are there other options?
I don't think there's a hole in the law. I think you're protected in Maryland if you were working for a Maryland company.
We can get George's phone number, and phone number off the air.
Let's do that, and let me have someone from my office call you.
Yeah. Sorry,
okay,
that was about wages, not workman's comp.
Right, that was about wage claim.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting. Stay on the line, George, okay?
And I will stay on the line.
Yeah, speak to our producer. We'll get a phone number to Brian Frosch for you.
Thank you, George.
So he worked. It was a Maryland company. He did work for the
if
company
they sent
in Vermont.
Him out of state to work in Vermont, they're still required to pay him.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
So I can understand why Vermont would say take it to Maryland.
Right. I can't understand why Maryland would say it's a Vermont issue. Yeah.
Here's an email question from Ben for Brian Frosch. Why do Maryland laws protect the disciplinary records of public law enforcement officers? And why is there not more transparency in this regard?
Well, you're asking what the legislative intent was, essentially, that created that exemption from the Public Information
Under
Act.
The Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights,
well,
right?
Well, I think this one may be personnel records are not
public,
subject to the Public Information Act request. And so the question you have to ask if you're a legislator is – do we want we don't allow people to get the personnel records of Joe Blow, who's working for the Department of Transportation? Are we going to make the personnel records of somebody who works for the police department available just because he works for the police department? And I expect that the arguments that you would get would be, on the one hand, well, wait a minute, these guys are protecting public safety. If they're abusing people or whatever, then the public has a right to know. But on the other hand, if this person was disciplined for showing up late or
having
a dispute
problem
with his family, really, does the public have an interest in that? And if not, how are you going to make those calls once you say letting the public see what's in the record?
Could you make the call, you know, if you have an appropriate custodian of the records, make the call based on, you know, disciplinary action related to performance of duties, not
But the personnel records are full of those things. You get a performance review every year. Does the public really have an interest in that? The guy got a satisfactory as opposed to an excellent, and here is why. I'm not saying no, but I think you get into a series of very complicated questions once you start saying we're going to let some personnel records be subject to the Public Information Act.
Hmm. You understand why there's heightened interest in this.
Absolutely, I do.
You know, we find out about some cases because they get to court, because the city or the county gets sued because of the behavior there of an officer, alleged behavior.
And when you have a lawsuit, those records get disclosed to the other side.
Right.
So if there's a criminal case, if there's a civil suit, then the other side gets those records and say, hey, this guy really was it. I'm not the only guy he beat up. There was somebody else.
It's an interesting issue, isn't it? Where's the public interest served? If I were to say, well, Attorney General, what if we or the legislature or the governor who is ever involved in deliberating on a new law, What if we wanted to know about disciplinary, about complaints, say, complaints against officers? We wanted to know if there were any officers who had 10 or more complaints from citizens over the course of 5 years, say, or 2 years.
Well, as I say, you can make the law do whatever you want if you're in the General Assembly.
I'm just trying to imagine what's in the public interest without breaching privacy altogether.
Yeah, you can draw lines. The General Assembly could say, you know, when he's got more than 10 complaints, that ought to be subject to public. But
your answer to the question from Ben is interesting because you're not separating law enforcement officers from any other public employee.
Well, I mean,
whereas people have the impression that they have extra protection under the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights.
I don't believe they do. I think the real question here is the Public Information Act question.
Mm-hmm.
The Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights really regulates the worker management situation. It's not open to the public. It's what the chiefs can do with respect to somebody who's being disciplined.
Another question for you, Brian Frosch, Maryland Attorney General. The money guys. Who are the money guys? Well, we know the money guys are known as they're known as. It's actually Everest Wealth Management Incorporated, financial advisors based in Baltimore County. What are you doing there? Why did you go after them?
Well, our securities division has sued them. We're seeking to pull their license, and the reason is that they have misrepresented the total assets that they manage in order to make it look like they're a bigger concern than they are. They falsified forms to transfer client funds from other brokers to them, and they created an investment program that they have puffed up the returns they claim that the program will do for their clients or has done
the return.
In the past.
That's so. Those are you allege that those are breaches of state law.
Yes, they are.
And so, by suing them, what do you seek? Do you seek to put them out of business or just cease and desist those practices?
Both. I mean, we are seeking to pull their license and to have them cease and desist those practices.
Now, they have countersued, and it sounds like a defamation suit, from what my reading of it is. I guess we could call it that.
I think what they're really asking is for some judge to stop us from suing them. It's an odd situation, but that's what they're doing. And look, we're performing the job that we are charged by the public to serve. We're protecting consumers. We're protecting investors. And the idea that a court should stop us from being the prosecutor in this situation, I think, is not going to end up happening for them.
Hmm. This company is known for infomercials and advertising, advertised as the money guys. Interesting. So what happens with this? You settle it in court. A judge listens to what you allege and what they allege, and it gets settled
in
court.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And then what about customers of this company? Do you have to show harm to the customers, or are the breaches you're talking about
the breaches
violation of making claims that have no foundation or inflated?
Right. When you're misrepresenting what you're doing, when you are falsifying forms to transfer assets, those are violations of the law.
Okay. And you don't have to show harm to clients.
Well, we are not alleging in this case that they have stolen clients' money. But when they're misrepresenting what they are doing, we think that itself is harm to clients.
Another realm of finance that caught your attention, and I guess other attorneys general, is the financing of the education of students at for-profit colleges.
Yes.
For-profit schools. There's been a lot about this in the news in the last couple of years. I think highlighted by the bankruptcy filing of Corinthian Colleges. We've heard a lot about that school.
Corinthian is perhaps the worst case. It's a classic case. Some for-profits do a good job, some don't. But the problem that we've experienced or we've heard complained about in Corinthian schools and others is that the schools advertise that they're going to give you a degree, you're going to get an education that's going to get you a specific kind of a job.
At a specific salary.
At a specific salary or better, and they don't produce. They're not accredited, or you go to somebody with that degree and they just laugh in your face. Some of these institutions have thousands of recruiters and no placement officers. And some of them, and Corinthian, I think, was probably in that category, focused totally on getting the money. You, Dan, go out and borrow some money from, get a student loan, come to us. Once they got the money, the performance wasn't there. And what you got as a result of it wasn't worth the money that you are now in hock for and can't discharge in bankruptcy, because student loans aren't dischargeable in bankruptcy.
I remember, I'm aware of that. I was a little surprised to hear that.
Yeah.
I remember a phone call we received here, kind of a sad call, from the mother of a student who had enrolled in one of these schools and racked up a lot of debt, could not find a job in the field that he had studied for, and did not have a good answer for her in how to resolve the debt. She was stuck with several thousands of dollars there.
There's no good answer.
So what have you tried to do with the students who have been harmed by these for-profit schools?
So we have joined with other attorneys general and asked the Department of Education to have a program of loan forgiveness, especially for the students in the Corinthian schools, because now they've paid the money and they're not even getting the education. And we're working with students to try to get the feds to forgive the debt. But we also want to make consumers understand that they should be wary when they are applying for admission to these institutions.
And these schools have gone particularly after minorities and also veterans.
They have, and some of them prey on folks in very calculating and damaging ways. And some of them, as I said, do a good job. Some of them give you a real education, but some don't. You really have to be on your guard.
Let's take another call. Brian Frosch, Attorney General, our guest in this hour. We got time for a couple more calls here at the end of the hour. Beverly in Harford County in Bel Air. Go right ahead, Beverly.
Yes, my husband, in answer to the phone calls that people are getting, he came across something that works, approved by the FCC, and it's free. And
yes.
It's called NomoRobo.com.
Right. NomoRobo is a great app from what I've heard. I think it works for voice over internet phone service. Is that the kind of phone service you have, Beverly?
Yeah, he said it's digital voice over.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So it works great for that.
Yes, it rings once and then it cuts off.
Right. I think the FCC ran a contest, and the creator of NomoRobo won the contest because it was such a good app. They gave him, I think, a $25,000 prize for his work. The same applications are not available quite yet for folks who have the typical cellular service.
Naomi wrote in to say that since we moved to Baltimore 2 years ago and got a landline, we've been occasionally receiving automated calls from debt collectors. They are always for different people, although in one case, the name was my last name and a first name that started with the same letter as my first name. And they are only ever to our landline. Is it possible that this is some sort of scam like the one you alluded to earlier?
Well, I don't know whether it's a scam or whether it's a mistake.
Yeah,
but
part of the sales of debt.
Absolutely.
Debt data.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like is going on. They sold your data to someone and they picked C. Smith and went for it.
Here's a question from Jonathan in Parkville that wonders about the relationship between the Attorney General's office and the state's attorneys around the state, in particular Marilyn Mosby's office, the Baltimore State's Attorney's Office in Baltimore. What, if any, relationship do you have with state's attorneys? Do you help advise them in any way? And what, if anything, has the Attorney General's office done with regard to the Freddie Gray case?
So state's attorneys and the Attorney General are all independently elected. There's a state's attorney in every county. They're the prosecuting attorneys. We have constitutional relationships with them, namely, we handle all criminal appeals. So every case that's handled by every state's attorney in the state when it's appealed is handled by the Attorney General's office. I, in particular, have reached out to all of the state's attorneys, and we have formed task forces so that we can operate together and enhance our separate capacities. We have an organized crime task force that we're working with local state's attorneys on. We have a crimes of exploitation task force that we're working with them on. And Marilyn Mosby and I have spoken, and I hope are going to be able to cooperate. We've cooperated on several cases. Tharu Vignaraja, my deputy, tried a murder case that was the state's attorney's case just a couple of weeks ago, tried it successfully. So we're trying to work together with them.
You haven't worked on the Freddie Gray case.
The Freddie Gray case, we've spoken, but she has not needed my input or help on that.
Well, thank you for being here today, Brian Frosch. I hope you come back and visit us again. It's been very informational, and we appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Dan.
Yeah,
thank
you. Brian Frosch, the Attorney General of Maryland. That's the first hour of Midday. Today we have another hour coming up. David Zerowick of the Baltimore Sun will be here for our monthly Midday on Media. Lunch for our guests today provided by Dangerously Delicious Pies. They're sitting out in the lobby and they look really good. With locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the Square in Canton and 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. Their menu includes a large variety of homemade sweet and savory pies and quiches. Please stay tuned for the news and then we'll see you for the second hour of our show.